Buckle up, because we're diving into the seismic shifts in the car industry. You already know what's happening at the gas pump, but those higher fuel costs are also making buying a car more of a challenge. It's making manufacturing and scarce car parts more costly, too. All of this is getting reflected in the sticker price for both used and new cars. And then there are those rising interest rates, making car loans harder to swallow. So many once eager potential car buyers are dejectedly walking away from those dealerships, and that leaves car makers in a bind. Ford has reported that 40 to 45,000 of its vehicles are waiting on parts, according to the Wall Street Journal, and 2023 was supposed to be the runway moment for electric vehicles, but EV makers are facing computer chip shortages. That's leading some analysts to predict a major profit downturn across the industry. We are in a moment of major upheaval. And here to talk about all that and more is reporter Sean McClain and comedian Kurt Brownoler. We'll look back at stories from our sister show Business Wars Daily and look ahead to our next season, Toyota versus Honda. Stick around for the best of Business Wars Daily.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts. From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is the best of Business Wars Daily. We're talking about the car industry, and I'm joined by Wall Street Journal staff reporter Sean McClain. Sean, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And comedian Kurt Brownoler. He's the host of the popular silly news podcast, Bananas. He's also just released his new comedy special, Perfectly Stupid, on Moment.co. So glad that you could join us as well. It's great to have you.
Thank you. I'm actually pretty qualified to talk about this stuff because I don't mean to brag or anything, but I've actually ridden inside a car at least, I would say, once a day for like 40 years.
You're
so
kidding.
Pretty familiar with cars. Sometimes I'll ride multiple times a day. Again, I humble brag, I know.
So at least we can get the perspective from the passenger seat. Do you drive very much, by the way, or pretty much rely on others to do that for you?
No, I totally drive, but I'm very familiar with that passenger seat too. I know all around a car.
We started off this episode by talking about how part shortages are affecting car makers, but let's dig into what that actually means for consumers. Here's a clip from a recent episode of Business Wars Daily. Ford said it would soon start making and selling some of its models without certain key parts the cars were designed to include. Why? Well, one big reason, chips, of course. Yet the continuing dearth of computer chips is stalling production lines, so Ford is skipping a few steps. The car maker said it would not be cutting corners on any safety features. Instead, Explorer SUVs will soon be shipped without rear seat controls for the air conditioner and heat. That means folks in the back seat, you're out of luck when it comes to temperature control. It sounds like a small thing, right? But it will have a big impact. A Ford spokesperson said the move would help get vehicles to customers sooner. It'll give an already tight inventory some breathing room. And for those backseat drivers who are worried about regulating their temperature, Ford has promised that those parts can be added later for free once the chip comes in, of course. Sean, I have to ask you about this because I've seen pictures, I bet you have too, of enormous parking lots full of brand new vehicles not en route to the dealer, but just sitting there parked, waiting for the chips to come in. Where are we with this whole chip shortage thing?
Well, I guess the good news is it's getting better. The bad news is it still is terrible. I mean, the problem for these car makers are cars are only getting more and more complicated, and the number of chips that need to go into these things we cover everything from your automatic windshield wipers to your car's ability to keep itself in a lane. I mean, these are made by specialized facilities spread around the world, but concentrated in Asia. And that's where we're having a lot of problem. Earlier in the pandemic, the issue was just as much about shipping these chips as it was making them. But increasingly, it's just we've got such a backlog of cars waiting for these parts. And it's just going to take a long time to clear this backlog because these factories can only produce so many chips at a given time. And it takes years to bring new ones online. And I guess the final piece of the puzzle is that chip makers themselves are a little reluctant to invest heavily in bringing on additional capacity because it's a multi-billion dollar investment. And they've done that in the past, anticipating demand, and they've been burned in the past. And so they're slow walking their expansion. And that just means higher prices for you and me.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And also some unexpected surprises for some car purchasers. Kurt, I want to ask you about this because I've heard that some people are taking delivery of their cars with the promise that when the chips do come in, they can sort of retrofit it. Would that fly for you as a consumer or not so much?
First off, the fact that when I heard there's a chip shortage, I thought it was for something important. It's for controlling the back air conditioning. I'll tell you what, I'll sell my chip right now to anybody who offers so my kids don't have to fight over who gets to control it. I hate the back air conditioned controller. I say less control for the back seat.
Less
keep
control
them out.
For the back seat. Yeah, sure. But that's not the only chip we're talking about here. I think that there's a real serious consideration that a lot of people have to make. You know, you've seen these Ford Broncos, and they're one of the most desired vehicles in the country, in the world, in fact, right now. And they've been selling for retailing, you know, for like $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 more than their MSRP, right? And they come with missing chips on occasion. And some of those things control some, you know, for instance, I don't know that this is the case in the Bronco, but for instance, we're talking about, say, tire pressure sensors, for example, that sort of thing. Some of these ancillary accessories that a lot of us have kind of gotten used to. Is that acceptable for the factories to sort of put these cars out there when they're not 100%?
I would buy it. I mean, like, look, if you need a car and you've been waiting months and months to get a car and you know that the car you need is sitting there, but your tire pressure monitor isn't on there and you could get it in a year, but you could get your car now and then in a year get your tire pressure, I would totally do that.
Yeah, well, I have to say that I don't know about the tire pressure monitor in the Bronco per se. I know that the F-150 truck, which I think is the best-selling car, or I should say vehicle, in the United States, is supposed to have a start-stop button for its engine, you know, to save fuel. But that didn't have the microchip it needed, and people are still buying the truck. I mean, it says something about the popularity of some of these vehicles, don't you think, Sean?
Well, look, I think it says something about the level of technology of these vehicles. I think a lot of people, I mean, bear in mind, Americans keep their cars for like 10 years, right? So there's a lot of people driving around in a car that still has a key that you turn it on. And so, I mean, when you go to buy a new car in the States, it's like you're entering the space age. Every time you walk into the dealership, things have changed so much. So I think there's a lot of people that feel, well, I didn't have this in my previous car. I don't need it now. That said, it does create problems for car makers to have all of these cars out there with different numbers of chips, different numbers of parts. It's going to create problems, you know, shipping these things out to dealers. This is a problem that's going to continue for years. It's not going to be an easy fix.
Yeah, well, GM is excluding features like heated and cooled seats, adjustable lumbar support. These are all luxuries, I guess, unless I wonder if we've kind of become addicted to some of these some of these features. You know, maybe not, but it does sort of raise the question. What do you think, Kurt?
Oh, I have become addicted to the little blinking light that tells me if there's a car directly in my blind side.
Yeah, that's a good feature. That's a really good feature.
That's the one that I definitely like. As I have one car, like my wife and I both have a car. One doesn't have it and one has it. And so the likelihood of me pulling over and into someone because I don't see the blinking light and then remember, oh, it's the other car, is pretty high.
But, you know, here's the thing. You talk about, like, say, parking assist features in some of these cars. And for a lot of younger drivers who've gotten used to having a TV screen there to back up, not having a feature like that is pretty critical, right?
Oh, 100%. I have actually one of my car's backup cameras broken. And my wife was like, we need to get this fixed. It's not safe. And I was like, our whole lives, we never had this. And now all of a sudden it's a safety issue?
Well, ostensibly, I guess that it is a safety issue because I think the Department of Transportation began requiring some of that on cars, a rear camera. Or so. Sean, do you recall what the score is on that?
I don't remember, but one thing to be clear on is that today's cars are by far safer than they've ever been. And I think that we do become to rely on these things because they do keep us out of trouble. I would be embarrassed to admit the number of times I've almost hit a car merging lanes without that radar beeping at me, telling me that there's somebody there, you know? So clearly these things are all making us safer. I think that there's just a perception on the part of car buyers that maybe we don't need all that. And maybe if I didn't buy all this, my car would again cost $20,000 as opposed to $35,000, you know?
What's the end game here? When are the chips supposed to be back in stock and cars 100% all over again? Have you heard anything, Sean?
You know what? They don't know. I mean, the estimated date for when this is going to recover has been the end of the year. For the past like 2.5 years, it feels.
Yeah.
You know, like everybody's been sort of hoping that the problem is going to get better, but it really, nobody can really get a good handle on it. It's too complicated. There's too many moving pieces. It all depends on car demand. And, you know, nobody has the full vision on it. No single CEO could say, you know, based on what my company is doing and what I guess that the competitors are doing, we're going to be out of this by X date. Nobody really knows, but everybody's kind of thinking maybe the end of this year, maybe the end of next year.
But part of the unintended consequence of this is that you reduce supply of vehicles, demand remains where it is, and that's going to drive up the cost of all vehicles. And we're seeing that really in the marketplace. Kurt, have you done any car shopping of late or no?
I was doing car shopping and then I was like, oh, I'm not. I'm stopping because I can functionally get by with the car that I have right now. And so that's what we're doing. We're functionally getting by with the cars that we have. But I do think that we're probably looking at kind of an IKEA future for cars. Well, they'll just be given to us in a flat box and then we'll have a 50,000 page instruction manual to assemble it ourselves.
When we come back, the gas guzzlers aren't the only ones running into trouble. Electric vehicles are facing manufacturing challenges of their own. That's when we come back. Stay with us. You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. Hey, welcome back to the Best of Business Wars Daily. With us today, Sean McClain, a staff reporter for the Wall Street Journal covering the electric vehicle market and Japanese and Korean automakers. You know, in our next Business Wars series, we're covering the rivalry between Toyota and Honda. Both companies are investing billions in their electric vehicle lines, but, well, the shift has had some bumps in the road. Let's check out a clip from a recent Business Wars Daily episode. You know, there are certain things you expect when you buy a brand new car. A shiny, nick-free exterior, that new car smell, of course, and wheels that actually stay on the car while you're driving. Well, apparently that last bar was a bit too high for Toyota's new electric SUV line. Back in June, the company issued a warning to owners of its newly released bZ4X electric SUV, telling them they should stop driving their vehicles immediately. The wheel bolts could come loose, causing the wheels to fall off the vehicle, even after driving relatively few miles, according to trade publication Electric. And here's the kicker. So far, Toyota engineers have not been able to figure out why it's happening, a CNN report added. Electric obtained a recent letter from Toyota to customers offering owners of the SUVs a $5,000 credit, an extended warranty, and other perks for their trouble. But if they don't want to wait anymore for a solution, Toyota's going the extra mile. The company will actually buy back the car, which cost more than $40,000. The recall affects roughly 2,700 vehicles. The bZ4X is Toyota's first attempt at an all-electric vehicle, and these bumps in the road may actually slow the company's goal of releasing 30 new electric vehicles within the next 8 years. You know, since we reported this story, Toyota apparently has restarted production on the bZ4X. Sean, you reported that restarted production earlier this month. You think consumers are going to have enough confidence to start buying again?
Look, I think everybody who's bought a car before or reads, for example, consumer reports knows that the sort of the first batch of cars of a brand new model, the chance you're going to get a lemon are pretty high. So I think that demand for the Toyota vehicle is going to depend on whether or not you think that's a good car, as opposed to whether or not it's had a recall in the past. I don't think we've ever seen, except for maybe things like a Chevrolet Bolt that caught fire and lit your garage on fire. I don't know if we're going to see that sort of impact, but I don't know. It kind of, you never know until it gets out there what, you know, your average American car buyer is going to think about that vehicle.
Kurt, I want to bring you in here since you say you've been in the market for one of these new cars. Would you go for that Toyota? This isn't endemic to the electric car marketplace, by the way. I mean, everyone, as Sean was saying, has had to deal with those, you know, first year bugs, right?
Yeah, I just have to say that, sure, maybe there's some bugs, but having all four wheels come off is the funniest bug you could ever invent for a car manufacturer. It is the most basic part of the car is the wheels, and that those might just roll off while you're cruising down the street is so funny to me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's fair enough, Sean. you wanna come back and defend your first year bug theory?
Well, some bugs are worse than others. And I think one thing that to bear in mind here is that the reason why it takes so long to figure out what the problem is and to fix it for a company like Toyota, for any company, is those screws that they use on the assembly line to drill in. They've got to figure out which man in which shift was responsible for screwing those things in properly. And that is just a mountain of computer data that they've got to go through in the backup drive. And so that stuff takes time. And the fact that they're restarting production means that they've figured out who it is. That person has probably been appropriately yelled at. And going forward, they think the bolts are tight enough. But yeah, I agree that like having your wheel fall off driving down the road is a less than ideal outcome for a brand new $40,000 car.
Well, you know, Toyota is not the only company with recalls. Sean, you recently reported on a story about Rivian. This is the electric truck and SUV maker recalling all of its vehicles because of an issue that could affect steering. What's up with that?
Now, the problem is actually it's a steering problem, but it actually goes back to the wheels again. So in this case, it is a bolt that links up the steering control arm to the suspension linkage. And that was improperly screwed in and could come off and cause your wheels to flare out to the point where you can't drive either. They won't roll down the street, but you will be essentially wheelless in a Rivian vehicle that has this problem as well.
Kurt, does this put you off electric vehicles? I mean, we are talking about some technologies here with the engines close to the wheels, you know, packed right up there alongside the wheels. So, you know, people are trying new design approaches and that sort of thing. How do you feel about electric vehicles generally?
I have a Leaf, a Nissan Leaf, and I love it. And definitely my next car will be an electric vehicle. But what I do appreciate about all these problems is that these are like, there's no problem with the battery. There's no problem with the motor. All these things that are like the actual brand new piece of technology. It's problems with the wheels, problems with the steering wheel, things that have been in cars since 1905, which is very funny to me.
You know, what's really hard for me to do is to get away from referring to the motors as engines. Mm-hmm. Everyone gets all up in my face about referring to those as engines. Sean, have you ever stumbled across that one? Are you probably smarter than I am?
No, I mean, the semantics of these words are I think silly in some senses. And I think some car makers probably think it's silly as well, but you know, it is what it is. I just want to correct Kurt on one thing. Battery manufacturing is a tough business. I mean, Rivian, if we go back to talk to them, they were having production issues that I reported on where they were having real hard time welding those battery packs together and basically putting holes in it. Ooh. It's real finicky business to have these robot arms assemble these big batteries. So you're going to probably see for a while, especially new models, real manufacturing problems. And certainly we saw it with Tesla for years. It took them a long time to get the production lines going in a quality fashion for their new vehicle. So EVs are not easy to assemble.
Kurt, have you had any bugs or any, I guess wheels have not fallen off, but have you had any issues?
I have not had any issues with the Leaf other than the backup camera just simply stopping working. But no, I love it. I love it. And, you know, I charge it here at my house and I have solar panels. So it feels like I'm riding on sunshine, baby.
You know, there was a recent YouTube video that went viral involving Tyler Hoovy. He calls himself Hoovy on YouTube. And it was a fascinating story where he tested out the new F-150 Lightning, which there's been a lot of buzz around. This is the all-electric pickup truck that Ford's now selling. And they are gorgeous-looking vehicles and fast as all get-out. But what he found, what Tyler Hoover found, was that he could not really tow much very far. For instance, he wanted to put another truck on a flatbed. It was an old antique truck that he was going to repair. He drove it, you know, 30 miles and it just drained the battery. And this got picked up by the media, especially by conservative media, saying, look, I mean, the testers on YouTube are showing that SUVs aren't all they're cracked up to be. These claims are inflated of, you know, hundreds of miles, you know, of range. You know, I think that what does the Lightning have there, Sean? Do you recall something like 230 miles, something like that?
Something like that.
What did you make of this brouhaha over how, you know, it can't really tow that far and it doesn't go nearly as far as its rating?
Well, I mean, I think like you should ask a truck owner how far they're able to tow their boat, you know, with their gas powered F-150 as opposed to normal driving. Your range is always going to go down when you're carrying something heavy.
For sure.
And let's be reminded that the mile per gallon ratings on vehicles are estimates. as are the electric range estimates.
Yeah.
But that said, owning, and Kurt, I'm sure you know, like owning an EV requires you to have different daily considerations than owning a gas car. If you're towing a boat 500 miles and you can only go 200 on a tank of gas, that's not a huge problem as long as you've got a gas station with room. It is a bigger problem if you've got an EV that needs to go 500 miles with your boat.
Kurt, are you having to make personal compromises as a result of your switch to EVs? I mean, are you having to basically work your life around the vehicle, or is the vehicle completely accommodating to you on the basis of, you know, how you live your daily life?
It's completely accommodating to me. I plug it in at night, and so I have a full charge in the morning, and I get, like, you know, it's not a ton of mileage, but I get 115, but that's more than enough for taking my kids to school and back, which is my main commute. And when I want to go on a road trip, I have a Toyota Highlander hybrid that we use for that.
So you have the best of both worlds, it sounds like. Sean, is manufacturing EVs more complicated, or are these recalls that we've been hearing about and some people sort of being disappointed, are they happening at the same rate as regular car and vehicle recalls, or how do you see it?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Look, I think in some senses, EVs are easier. There are far fewer parts. Electric motors are extremely simple machines. Mm-hmm. Battery packs are extremely finicky and extremely difficult to put together, even when they're highly automated. I mean, you'll talk to any manufacturing specialist and robots are dumb. You know, it takes a long time to get it right. And then the fact that they also have way more of these computer chips that are in shortage. So yeah, and in one sense, EVs are really hard to get right. And then the other thing that I think you're seeing here is that there are all new vehicles coming out by the dozens by every car maker. And it doesn't matter what kind of vehicle it is, whether it's powered by dinosaur fuel or whether it's powered by batteries. Every time a car maker comes out with an all new model, and I'm not talking about the next F-150, I mean an all new thing, they always have a long period of maybe a year that it takes to get it right. And those cars are always more prone to recalls and manufacturing defects. That's just the way it is. They're just incredibly complicated machines to put together.
Are you surprised by how the transition has been going so far? Is this about the acceptance level that you expected when you first began to encounter EVs, Sean?
You know, it's hard. So I've been abroad outside the U.S. for a while. Uh-huh. And for me, my gauge on U.S. car buyer demand has been my brief trips back to the U.S. and also, you know, talking to friends and family. And it was never clear to me that the vast majority of America was ready for it's a lifestyle change of what it means to be a car owner. You know, you do have to plug it in at night. You do have to worry about, you know, sort of range, and you can't just top it up to full. You know, if you want to get in and out of a recharging facility in a reasonable amount of time, you need to go for like 50% charge, which is enough. But again, it's just one of those things that people have to change their mindset about. And you have to consider, what do you use a car for, whether you need an EV or a gas powered car or your, you know, diesel or whatever. So it just wasn't clear what the uptake would be. What is clear now is that EV demand from car buyers is higher than I think anybody in the industry expected. Hmm. People want these cars. And the faster that car makers can get them out in the market, I think there's just going to be a huge swell of demand. Now, what happens when we reach saturation in places like California and the Eastern Seaboard? Like, I don't know. We still don't know what, you know, Bob in Omaha, Nebraska wants to buy. We're going to find out in the future.
Yeah, it's not just Bob in Omaha, Nebraska. I mean, there are a lot of auto enthusiasts who see the EV as kind of taking away a lot of that driving experience because, you know, a lot of it's just sort of software driven, if I didn't mean to make a pun there, but I mean, that's largely what it's about. And Kurt, as someone who owns an all electric Leaf, I have to ask, what was your intent when you bought it? Were you hoping maybe, were you thinking more environmentally? Were you thinking about perhaps this is going to be a way to save money? What was the tipping point for you?
I've always been motivated environmentally. Mm-hmm. But also the electric vehicle. I don't understand the argument that driving is less fun with an electric vehicle. I think driving is more fun with an electric vehicle because it just takes off. I have a Leaf. Guys, I have a Nissan Leaf. It's the lowest end of the electric cars. And it like takes off the line. It goes so fast, so quickly. And so I think it's really fun to drive. And I know that I have like the lowest experience, like the bottom level experience of an electric vehicle. So if I had like a Tesla or something like that, they're so fun to drive.
Yeah, I totally understand the acceleration part of it. But I think, you know, motorheads or gearheads would say, well, but that doesn't mean it's fun to drive just because it goes fast. I mean, it's that, you know, if you've ever driven a Mazda Miata, you get it. Right. I mean, it has this mix of handling and that driver interaction, the experience of certainly in an open top vehicle, but a sports car, you know, for people who are really into automobiles. Sean, do you see any resistance on that front?
I think there's going to be resistance to it. But I think, honestly, David, it's been happening for longer, even before EVs. You know, the shift to CVT transmissions away from manuals and then to automatic transmissions. And now we're at CVTs, these continuously variable transmissions. And increasingly, we're moving into hybrids. I mean, I think your ability to find a driver's car is getting harder and harder. You know, to the point where Toyota and Subaru and Mazda, these companies, they sell speciality in the Nissan Z, I should say, the speciality driver's cars that you can get for like $30,000 or $35,000, whatever it is now. But like, you can't get a driver's car anymore. They're just increasingly going to be highly electrified, technologically advanced. Your ability to find like a car that's just fun to drive as a recreational thing is going to be a luxury item going forward.
Well, we're going to be talking about the transition to an all-electric future, one that could include two-wheel options zipping around as well. You're listening to the best of Business Wars Daily. Stay with us. We get support from Acura. The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com. We get support from Court. You know, the way people work is changing and the workplace itself needs to change too. But what if flexibility wasn't just an option? With Court's flexible furniture solutions, you can create agile work environments that become your team's greatest advantage. Save capital with swing spaces, attract top talent with collaborative environments, and create connected spaces that employees will love. Flexibility is the future, and Court Furniture Rental helps you embrace it. Learn more at Court, that's CORT.com/office. Hey, welcome back to the Best of Business Wars Daily. Joining us, Wall Street Journal staff reporter Sean McClain and comedian Kurt Brownoler, who's just released a new comedy special, Perfectly Stupid. We've been talking all about the car industry and the move toward electric vehicles. But what about a different way to get around? Think electric scooters. Let's check out a Business Wars Daily story from April 2022. With a Wall Street debut value of around $2.35 billion, Gogoro says it will use proceeds from the offering to expand into China, India, and Southeast Asia, according to CNN. In each of those places, Gogoro has partnered with two-wheeler manufacturers to expand its lineup of vehicles. CEO Horace Luke welcomes comparisons to another certain electric vehicle company. You may have heard of it, Tesla. And in fact, Tesla might be giving the company a boost. Luke says folks in cities like Bangkok and Mumbai might be fans of Tesla but find its vehicles unaffordable. Enter Gogoro. And as he told CNN, quote, "The electrification of transportation, especially with Tesla leading the way, creates a great tailwind for us," end quote. So there's a reason the company is sometimes called Baby Tesla or the Tesla for two-wheelers. Two-wheelers are a dime a dozen across Southeast Asia, but the U.S., not so much. Well, now, Kurt, you said that you couldn't afford a Tesla. How about a baby Tesla? One of these two-wheelers? you in the market? Can I convince you?
I'd be down. I just love the name Baby Tesla because it makes me imagine Baby Elon Musk in his playpen with Baby Grimes, a real Muppet Babies vibe all around.
Sean, you think this is going to take off or stall? I see a lot of Lime scooters scattered all over Austin, Texas these days. So I don't know. How's it looking elsewhere?
Look, I think if you want to know what the market is going to be like, take a look at Honda's earnings. In America, we know Honda is a maker of the Civic, the CR-V, the Accord. But for most of their business, in fact, one of the most profitable parts of their business is selling scooters and motorcycles to people in Southeast Asia and India.
Yeah.
It is a massive, massive market. And they're right in the sense that there's a lot of demand for electrification in that part of the world. But there's a couple problems. Car ownership is very low, and getting a loan to buy a car in that part of the world is very difficult. And charging a vehicle in a unreliable electricity grid in a place like India, where even in the capital city, Delhi, you lose power like 2 hours a day, is just a difficult proposition. However, scooters and motorcycles and mopeds and everything in between like solve that problem. They're quick to charge. They're cheap to buy. Financing is easy. And you know, they solve a personal mobility problem for over a billion people. So there is a massive market.
But what about the U.S.? I mean, do you think that this way of getting around will ever catch on this side of the Pacific?
It's harder to. I mean, look, I guess it depends on where you live. You know, I am a bike rider here in Tokyo, Japan. I do not think I will be one when I move to L.A. shortly. I think this just, you know, your ability to ride around in small two-wheel vehicles is limited by the number of large SUVs on the road.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a difficult proposition.
We've been talking about inflation and the steep price of cars. It seems like perhaps electric scooters or bikes could be an answer. Kurt, what would get you on two wheels?
I love those scooters. I mean, I'd go right now. I mean, I think people have a love-hate relationship with those scooters. You know, like when you're riding them, you're loving them. And then when they're parked on the sidewalk, you hate them. there's an Instagram account that's where people just break those scooters, which is so crazy. But I think I'm the reason that people don't like the scooters, because they could just picture me riding in just like, beep, beep.
Yeah.
I'm here to gentrify your neighborhood.
Okay. Well, there are scooters and there are scooters. They're the Lime, you know, those mm-hmm. little things that look like sort of skateboards with two wheels at the end and a stick straight up. But then there are also the sort of the Vespas, the Honda Super Cub looking, you know, they're rather nicely styled. They look a bit like a junior motorcycles. What about that?
Oh, yeah. I actually had a Vespa. I had a 1979 Vespa P200E back in the day. Mm. So I would totally ride an electric scooter. I think that's cool.
Well, Sean, you heard the man. It sounds to me like perhaps that could be great in college towns, big cities. You know, it sounds like it could be a very attractive solution for a lot of mobility issues.
Look, I think it makes sense. You know, I think I've often toyed with the idea of getting something like that, too, because the license requirements are easier, the purchase requirements are easier. And really what it comes down to is whether or not the people can afford to buy it, and whether or not there's a place that they can use it sensibly. And I think if those two things come together, you're always going to find a market for that, no matter where you are in the world.
Do you guys remember, it was a few Christmases ago, and young folks were buying electrically powered hoverboards, and they were catching fire in garages all over the place. Where do we stand with the whole issue of these batteries that are used for electric transportation solutions? I know that Tesla, there have been reports of Tesla's batteries exploding, at least in the past. Where are we with that, Sean?
Well, I think there are a number of considerations here. And I think the best resource we have for battery quality and manufacturing is a company called Benchmark. And they rate battery manufacturing facilities on sort of like almost like a grade school A to, I guess, maybe F scale. And there are very few A's out there in this world right now. And that's the problem, is that battery production, the quality matters more so than it does for, you know, a gasoline engine. You know, you have to get that right. Otherwise, you do end up with a very dangerous situation should that battery fail or explode. So I think until we get battery manufacturing quality more even across the board, I think, you know, at least on the low end of the scale, you know, there is, I guess, more danger. I don't know if there's a more propensity for there to be accidents, but it seems that there's a higher risk of accidents.
Kurt, that doesn't sound very reassuring to me. I mean, I mean, especially since, for instance, and Sean, I have to say, I wouldn't know whether the batteries in my particular vehicle are A rated or B rated or C rated, right? I mean, the consumer is left out of a lot of this. Kurt, how do you feel about this?
I mean, I feel like right now, you know, think about when the combustion engine first came out. I'm sure a dude on a horse was like, there's no way I'm driving around with a tank of gasoline underneath me. That could blow all the hell.
10 miles per hour. You got to be kidding me.
So, I mean, I feel like it's just it's a matter of time until they get to the point where they just don't spontaneously combust. But it is very funny that right now, you know, your options are, there's a thing that, you know, has tiny explosions in it and a ton of gasoline in it, and it's safer than just the battery version of it.
Sean, is that true? I mean, do you think the internal combustion engine right now is safer than most EV batteries or not really?
Look, I think the data show like that obviously the vehicles are safe, regardless of whether or not they're gasoline powered or battery powered. You know, whether or not one is more safe than the other. Look, I think the most dangerous part of owning a vehicle is not whether or not your gasoline, your gas tank will explode or your battery will catch fire, is whether or not you're going to get in a car accident.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think this is something necessarily we have to be worried about. And I should sort of qualify my earlier statement about battery factors. Major manufacturers work with top class battery manufacturers. And so what you're really talking about is things like these hoverboards that are sold cheap, and we just have zero insight onto their supply chain.
You know, I have to ask about the tipping point here. I remember when I was a little boy, but I remember when the federal government issued standards for gasoline, and the car makers pushed back. You know, we're talking about, you know, miles per gallon in this context. And the automakers pushed back saying, we can't build decent cars. And for many, many years with the new regulations in place, Detroit wasn't building decent cars. I mean, you had enormous V8 engines putting out a paltry 140 horsepower or something, that kind of thing, you know, and they were really anemic vehicles. Of course, nowadays, even with the new government mandates in place, we're experiencing a real performance renaissance in vehicles. I mean, we're talking about both internal combustion engines and electric vehicles producing upwards of 800, 900, 1,000 horsepower. It's really, really incredible. So I'm wondering, now that you have California stepping into the breach and saying, we want only electric vehicles in dealerships by, what is the year there, Sean, 2030 or 2035, something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that's going to be the tipping point for automakers to go all in on electric?
Yeah, look, in the U.S., the rest of the country always follows California. And the reason is that California has the biggest, most valuable car market. And car makers will follow the money. And so they're not going to make a different kind of car for people who live on the East Coast and the West Coast. They're going to make the car that the West Coast wants. And so we'll all end up driving whatever California decides.
Kurt, are you happy with that? Are you going to get to drive California style for the rest of your life?
Yeah, it's time, man. It's time. The combustion engine is time is over, folks. I'm sorry. We gotta stop using it.
That's comedian Kurt Brownholder. And we've also been talking with Wall Street Journal staff reporter Sean McClain. Sean, where can we find you?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at McClain Sean, where you can also see a big banner to my new book that's out on Carlos Ghosn.
Ah, the former head of Nissan. That's great.
So please read my stories. Please buy my book. So it's not just my mom.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds fantastic. And what a great story, too. Someone already bought the movie rights to that yet? Or are you...
There is a documentary that I think I can talk about coming out sometime soon.
Very exciting. Kurt, what's going on in your life and where can folks find you online?
They can find me on all of the social media things, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, at Kurt Brownoler. And my new special, Perfectly Stupid, it's a whole hour comedy about becoming a dad. And I think people really like it. You can find it right now at moment.co.
Kurt, Sean, thanks so much. And y'all ride safe.
You too.
Thank you.
Historically, there have been few industries that have inspired and excited the imagination like cars, certainly in the U.S. Oh, sure, we talk about the big three today, GM, Ford, and Chrysler, but since the dawn of the automobile era, more than 3,000 brands have staked a claim and ultimately gone by the wayside. From the supply chain to government regulations, dealer networks to manage, quality control, labor and management issues, and even reconciling the dreams of designers with the realities and limitations of engineers, the automotive manufacturing biz is ruthlessly complicated and difficult to succeed in. That hasn't slowed several entrepreneurs dazzled by the prospect of an all-electric future and sensing an historic moment of opportunity. Several have raced to stake their claims, with many winding up as roadkill. Faraday, Fisker, and Koda among the case studies. Never heard of them? Ask someone on the street to name an electric car brand and count how many times you hear the word Tesla. That's testimony, at least in part, to the company's willingness to get in early and start with a mostly clean sheet. But even Tesla's been having teething pains, lots of would-be EV adopters still waiting for their Cybertrucks to arrive. And what's more, with the aforementioned Big Three entering the EV game, as well as big names like Mercedes, Hyundai, and others with decades of automaking experience, the pressure on Tesla isn't likely to abate anytime soon. The reinvention of the automobile, the shift from gas to electric, now seems all but inevitable. Far less clear is who will emerge as king of the road. But you can bet we'll keep you posted. Hey, if you're a fan of cars, you won't want to miss our upcoming series on Business Wars as we explore an earlier turning point in the car industry, a fight between Japanese rivals so big it almost sank Motor City, USA. It's Toyota versus Honda, coming up on Business Wars. From Wondery, this is the best of Business Wars Daily. I'm your host, David Brown. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Produced by Emily Frost and Jess Yarmosky. Sound designed by Sergio Enriquez. Our producer is Dave Schilling. Our managing producers are Tanja Thigpen and Matt Gant. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.